You're listening to Just Ask the Question, Adventures in Reporting with your host, Brian Karam.
Hi, and welcome back to Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam, and with me right now is Mayfair 101 founder, James Malwini, who has a new project we're going to talk about. James, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Brian. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. We got a lot to talk about, but before we do, we're going to pay the bills, so we'll take this short break, and we'll be right back.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth. With Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not released anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, we're back. It is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam. With me is, well, former Mayfair 101 founder, James Malwini. And James, we're going to unpack a lot of stuff that you have to do. We're here to talk about misinformation and disinformation in social and regular media. And James has an interesting new project that we got to ask him about, how he's going to make that happen. And it's an interesting concept. So I want to unpack that. But before we do that, let's talk about one of the reasons why you and ask you why you decided, because this is Just Ask the Question. So it's your own backstory that has led to where we are now. Let's start with what happened to you to make to bring you to this point where you're starting a new project. Tell me all about what happened before.
Sure. So the concept for media.com came about as a result of a very challenging, traumatic situation, which started with an investment group, which I launched about 2009. We decided in about 2015, 2016 to go out to the public and raise money. I'd made a range of quite successful personal investments, and I decided let's scale up our investment capability, open things up to the public. And between about 2016 and 2020, the same month that COVID hit, which was basically March 2020, we'd raised about just over $250 million. That money was in debt instruments, so they're all lenders to our group, and that enabled us to scale up our investment capabilities. We had, at our peak, assets in about 11 countries, over $600 million on our balance sheet of assets, you know, $250 million worth of liabilities, very well diversified portfolio, and things were going swimmingly well. However, in late 2019, we were attacked, albeit we're a private company, by a short seller who speculated that we were running a Ponzi scheme. That triggered regulatory involvement in the space of almost a nanosecond. Within a few weeks, they had drafted a public warning notice. They had done that without interviewing me. And fast forward now, 4 years since they opened their very short-lived investigation, they still haven't interviewed me. And in those 4 years, there have been 25 court cases triggered, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of damage. We had commenced a significant real estate project in far north Queensland, which was to be about a $1.6 billion redevelopment of a place called Dunk Island. And we'd purchased about 230 properties in a small coastal town that was quite depressed at the time, and had plans to revive the region. So hardly a business with no assets, which is what a Ponzi scheme is. And we, you know, every dollar was accounted for. And so, you know, apart from the fact I've survived to live to tell the tale, been very fortunate in this very challenging journey that there is a silver lining in all of this. And it came about a couple of months into this.
Well, wait a minute, before situation. We get to the yes. silver lining, let's talk a little sure. bit about the storm, because that I want people to understand just what the storm was. You picked up, we'll talk about regular media. Like the Financial Review said, this is a quote, several years after his funds management collapse in a blaze of bad publicity and ASIC investigation, he's cobbled enough cash together to buy the media.com domain. They'll use it, he announced last week, to launch a global online network. This is almost sneering at what you've done and saying that, you know, that, I mean, he even says Mawini knows all about ahem interference. Significant effort has been expanded by the ASIC to halt or hinder him managing other people's money. Then just a few, this was in October of 2023, a few short weeks later, this is in Australia, the federal court has ordered the Australian Securities and Investments Commission to pay the legal costs, your legal costs, after the corporate regulator failed to make any case against you. So you went from being accused of being a Ponzi scheme and pilloried in the press to having a decision that was, all right, so originally you received a 20-year ban from promoting and raising funds through financial products in April of 2021. And that was following the proceedings by the ASIC. However, that decision was overturned on appeal by unanimous decision by the full bench in September of 2022, which ordered the case be remitted to a new federal court judge. So, I mean, I want people to understand this isn't just you claiming that you weren't a Ponzi scheme. This is the court ruling that you weren't a Ponzi scheme, that you, in fact, hadn't engaged in what they pilloried you for. So that's the backstory that I think is important for people to understand is that, look, I get people all the time on here claiming, hey, you know, like I said, if you've dealt with American politics, which, you know, I do, I get people making all kinds of wild claims every day. But this is actually a claim that's based in a court decision. And for those who care anymore, these are facts. So that brings us to where we are now, which is media.com. And it is your desire to do what, in a nutshell, with this product?
If I can help one other person not experience the impact of misinformation on me, my family, we have 570 lenders to our group in Australia and all of their families. So the impact's been to literally thousands of people. I believe we've done our job with media.com. Now, that being said, because the internet is, you know, such a powerful connector, and if you look at the rate at which some of these tech giants have climbed the corporate ladder very quickly to ending up having hundreds of millions, if not billions of users, I really believe that digital space, if this is done right with media.com, which is exactly what we're planning to do and executing on currently, could in fact help millions of people around the world clarify misinformation, have a right of reply in an environment which is safe, where the water does not get muddied, and we're basically finally giving people a voice which they don't currently have. In my situation, which, I mean, I could spend hours and if not weeks or months talking about all the ins and outs of the court situations and the unfairness, and in that judgment of the three judges, they'd found that I'd been denied procedural fairness and overturned the 20-year ban. However, rather than just allowing the appeal, they actually sent it back to start again. So a couple of months ago, I was sitting in the Federal Court of Australia, more than 3 years on, thinking, I'm back to square one. Millions of dollars later, the court had found there'd been a denial of procedural fairness, but they'd sent it back to be started again. And so we've been to the High Court of Australia twice. As I said, you know, we've spent millions in legal fees, but the average person does not have that financial capability. The average person does not have a publicist or publicists. And even then, publicists and public relations managers are often somewhat ineffective because they are not the media. They claim to and will try to exert a level of influence over the media. But if a journalist wants to write something, generally speaking, their publication will support it. And that's what's happened in my situation. The publication that you just quoted from a moment ago,
Independent Financial Advisor.
The way the media landscape works in Australia, the Australian Financial Review is arguably the leading financial publication. Yes. I had a journalist attend an event that we ran on the 26th of September, I think it was 2019, sorry, 26th of November 2019. The next day, an email from a short seller that the journalist knows well, and they knew each other and had a history together, fires an email to the deputy commissioner saying that my spidey sense is going off badly about this scheme. You know, it has Ponzi-like connotations and a whole range of completely speculative allegations. There was no fact in there. The next day, the deputy commissioner forwards the email on to the head of investment managers, who drafts a public warning notice. All of that happened at light speed, and within a few weeks, the regulator had come crashing down on our business by issuing court proceedings, and then subsequent proceedings adjoining another proceeding, and the domino effect. We've spent, as I said, years and millions of dollars to try and remove the many layers of mud. Now, I'm an extreme situation, but
well, yeah, let me talk about that.
Said,
some of that,
yeah,
because. Here's the quote again from Financial Review. It's being reheard, and Mawini is suing ASIC for defamation. But in the interim, this is the last two graphs, and get your reaction to it. But in the interim, the former fund manager is going around telling everyone he won one over the regulator. This is premature, but a handy line as he jets from New York to London working on his next big thing. Mawini is also operating a new service claiming to be, quote, Australia's home of investing, unquote, which helps users identify investment scams. Like we said, he's totally incorrigible. Now, that's a hell of a thing to say if you're trying to introduce to people a product that battles misinformation. And the court dismissed the stuff, but they dismissed part of it, but they left a $30 million penalty? Is that correct?
They did, and I can explain how that occurred. It's very simple. The regulator had defunded us. They'd stopped our business activities. Did not even have access to any money to attend the trial to defend that. We couldn't afford legal representation. We had had an interim ban. I'd had an interim ban on dealing in financial products. I couldn't borrow money from my parents as a consequence of that. Not that they'd put up millions of dollars for this, but the reality is we were literally out of the game. We literally couldn't defend. And other than me standing up to self-represent in court, it was virtually impossible. We went to the full court, and the full court, the three judges said, bad luck, you didn't attend the trial to defend it. Therefore,
right,
you made a forensic decision, which we didn't make a forensic decision. Then we went to the High Court and they said, bad luck, you made a forensic decision. There was no forensic decision made not to defend that. So that $30 million fine is in a case which has never actually been contested.
Wow. It's
one of the most extraordinary situations because, of course, in the press, people read that and go, wow, they must have done something terrible. All of our clients were paid. We never missed a beat. We legitimately invested the money. If you compare it to the banks get lesser penalties in Australia and around the world in one instance for charging dead people.
Well,
but of course, unless you ask the question, too big to fail, brother. Absolutely. But unless you ask the question, which I know this is exactly what this is about with your excellent podcast.
thank you.
The truth doesn't simmer to the surface. And that's why I believe with what we're doing with media.com, it is just so critical so that these. For the untrained eye, when you realize the vast amounts of misinformation in the press, and it's not always disinformation or intentionally dishonest.
No, I agree.
But just simple statements of fact that are factually incorrect do need clarified regularly. And if I can touch on this very briefly, that same publication has said that I was banned as a company director for 20 years.
Right.
I have never been banned as a company director in any country around the world. The leading publication in Australia, arguably anyway, the Financial Press said that I'd been banned as a company director for 20 years. If I then fast forward to something that got published a few months ago, we attended the Sundance Film Festival to put media.com on the radar. And as a result of that, somehow a journalist had written that I'm featured in the Forbes top 50 entrepreneurs to watch. Now, that is also misinformation of a different type. Not complaining, obviously, but this just shows, as ridiculous as it sounds, this is how one individual can be painted at two extreme ends of the spectrum by media, that unfortunately doesn't get its facts right sometimes.
Well, that's part, and that's one of the big problems in this country that we talk about often is the fact that, well, there is misinformation and there is disinformation. The misinformation, I mean, it looks to me like if we cut to the chase in your case, and I'm a poet, don't know it, my feet show it. But if we cut to the chase in your particular case, what you're talking about is the reporting that was done didn't accurately reflect the facts of the case, and so that's the biggest point that to make in any journalistic effort is making sure that the facts are correct. And if they are not correct, then correcting them after the fact. Like, I'll walk out the door if I go to a live shot and it said three people are dead in a building fire, and actually there are 15. Well, we amend the fact later. We come back and go, well, originally we thought it was three, now it's 15. But in your case and in others, it appears that some of the follow-up doesn't get noticed like the initial run-up. Is that fair to say?
Look, absolutely. Two things to say there. When someone issues proceedings against someone else, or a company issues proceedings, or a regulator issues proceedings, often that's front page news. And whoever wins, that's probably front page news. If you win on an appeal, you'd be lucky to make the back page. It's the first thing. More importantly, and I can quote my own situation very directly, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that can relate to this. The media often drives regulatory outcomes and courtroom outcomes.
Well, because we uncover facts, we have more tools to investigate than they do. So naturally, and that's a natural byproduct. I don't think that's a bad thing. It's the follow-up by the regulatory agency that needs better. I mean, look, and I'm not telling you anything that you haven't experienced, and I'm not painting a picture
Of course.
that either one of us are angels here. I mean, what happened happened, but the reporting on what happened made it sound like you had been banned, that you were the bad guy. And it's always good and bad. We put hats on people, white and black hats. It's either or. It's very binary. Now, in some cases, I
Yes.
will maintain that that's an accurate reflection of what has occurred. But in financial doings, it's a little bit different. It's a little more complicated, a little more problematic to do so. You were speaking about the ban. I mean, I'm looking at the article that you're talking about. Last month, the full court overturned a 20-year ban against James, which was initially implemented to restrain him from advertising investments and raising funds from the public through financial products. That's what you were talking about, right?
Exactly right. Exactly right.
And you had not been banned. The court called the case very exceptional. So the nuance of
Yes.
news is difficult for the best of us, even those of us who have a great deal of experience in doing it. We're all going to screw up. We're all going to make mistakes. But we own those mistakes when we make them, or we should. So that again brings us to this product. And I want to talk more about that. We've got to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how you attack misinformation in the digital age and what you want to do with it. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, Just Ask the Question podcast listeners. If you've got a second, head on over to Twitter and follow our official page, JATQ Podcast. That's JATQ Podcast.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not found anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, we are back. It is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Kerriman. With me is James Malwini, who's former head of Mayfair 101, right? And now is operating media.com and has a goal to eliminate misinformation and disinformation in the Gilded Age. No, the computer age. And so, James, for some, it would be odd for you to say that you want to do this, but particularly those who have pilloried you in the past. But tell us a little bit about this product. How do you do that? How do you get rid of disinformation or misinformation? Give us the short, the elevator pitch on how you do that.
The elevator pitch. Well, I'm on the 15th floor, so the ride's pretty quick. Look, the concept for media.com is very, very simple. We believe that information authenticity has taken a backseat in the media industry because ultimately the business models of media outlets, including offline and online media outlets, are advertising revenue driven. News content largely historically has been free. Why? Because the advertisers are paying for it. If you look at it in an online sense, user profiles on the social networks by and large are free. Why? Because they're making squillions of dollars off your screen time. And so if the business model is to get as many ads in front of as many people that convert the best so that you're generating a big bottom line, information, authenticity, and integrity always will take second place, if not the third or fourth or fifth back seat. And we've seen that that's become the issue as the offline media industry has transitioned to online, particularly with offline publications having to move to digital formats. A lot of the publications have lost their classified ads revenue streams. And when they've transitioned to their online platforms, they've had to introduce paywalls as a way to try and supplement the declining revenues, both in terms of classified ads, but just advertising generally. And hence we're starting to see, this has been going on for many years now, but clickbait style headlines and even more dramatic reporting where journalists are now, in many instances, and what I experienced is we had some journalists become activists, ultimately because they're making their publication a lot of money by writing very headlines that really draw you in. So from that perspective, if we look at media as an information source, it's pretty clear that it isn't always going to be one that puts information or prioritizes information, given that fundamentally it is aligned with advertising revenues. The concept for media.com introduces an industry that probably hasn't been focused on too much in the past, at least in this context, and at least not adapting the very powerful models of social networks, which is an industry which I'd call the information industry. If you look at a courtroom, if I was to describe a plaintiff or an applicant in a court proceeding, the applicant opens the case, the courtroom's quiet, the judge is sitting there, and they state their case. And that's the equivalent of a media publication writing something about someone or about a business. It's also the equivalent of someone jumping on social media and saying, look, this person did this. How does the person respond to that? Now, in a courtroom, they wait their turn. It then becomes their turn. They stand up, or their attorney stands up and says, well, actually, this is the situation. The courtroom is quiet. There is no interference, generally speaking, and the defendant is allowed to state its case. The applicant, once the defendant's finished, is often given an opportunity to reply should they feel, and that could be the media then writing another piece. Well, actually, you know, this person said this and this is our response. So the justice system provides an environment where truth has a chance. It's not a perfect system, but it has a much better chance than what's going on if you look at the digital era at the moment.
So to short circuit you just a bit, what you want to do is apply court standards to online publication. Does that include making sure that people, you know who's posting? I mean, you can post anonymously today. So, but you want to vet the people that post, correct?
Exactly right. There's two key things. The person that goes into court, the judge knows who they are. Their attorney knows who they are. With media.com, every profile will be verified using the same technology that the banks use to identify who their customers are. It's called KYC, which stands for Know Your Customer. It is as sophisticated now as doing biometric scans of passport, which you can do from the safety of your laptop or your mobile phone. And all of a sudden, the users on the platform know that the other users are actually who they say they are. If you look at the social networks, you know, Elon Musk bought a platform with over 500 million active monthly users, over 90% of which he doesn't know who they are with near 100% accuracy.
No, and he eliminated all the verification processes that would let you know who they are.
Exactly right.
So, and now, and you're, let's see, I'm looking at, there was an Axios article on it. There is some, now, the details of what you're doing, you bought the domain name, you're getting people put it together. You say that there's a lot of deficiencies in how existing social media platforms are curtailing the spread of misinformation. I don't think anyone will disagree with that. There are some who believe that this is kind of a big picturing it, that some people believe, like Jeff Bezos and others, that their new features on, and this is what Bezos said, new features on social media can supplant the need to post into a blogging site. You don't allow just for idle comments. When something is posted, you can post, like, all right, you could say, for example, Brian Karam was caught, you know, down at the river choking goats, and then, you know, and here's the story of Brian Karam choking goats, and then you allow is someone to say, no, here are the facts that, you know, this was a picture of someone else choking a goat, and then someone else could say, in fact, it wasn't a goat, and it wasn't even a dog, it was a little girl playing with her doll, here's the picture of that. I know I'm being kind of simple in it, but that's what it is. It's not,
no,
like,
you got it.
Yeah, it's not like, screw you, you're an idiot, which is what we get a lot on social media.
And that's exactly right. We do get a lot of that, firstly, because profiles are unverified and there's a lot of people hiding behind smoke screens.
There are people people sitting in a room just cranking the crap out. That's the biggest problem I find. Is that what you're hoping to get rid of with this?
Look, absolutely. The bots create a problem because they're automated capabilities to set up accounts and fake accounts. You know, that has, as Nikki Haley said recently, national security implications in the United States, which is really a statement that I think applies around the world. But now, because of artificial intelligence, if you imagine, the bot can set up a fake account and millions of them very quickly. Now, misinformation can be created using artificial intelligence almost instantaneously. And so you have this very dangerous hybrid where fake account creation meets mass content creation. And so they become breeding grounds for misinformation. And if you consider the amount of screen time that we all consume on a daily basis on platforms where we don't know the true identity of the people that we're connecting with or consuming content from. We're being pushed content into our feed on a daily basis from people that we don't know, and arguably the social networks don't know either. It's a very dangerous environment, and one that's rapidly heading towards, I'd suggest, a collision. And that collision could be, could it be as simple as traumatic and terrifying as World War III. It could be someone posts something on a fake profile that goes viral. The information is false. It is dishonest. That says that there is a terrorist on a plane. The jet gets scrambled by the president. They shoot the jet out of the sky, killing innocent civilians. The jet lands over a town that had nothing to do with the jet or the terrorist or the passengers, but it was just flying over. And all of a sudden, everyone's aiming nukes at each other. Now, this is more serious.
I thought I had a dark. I thought I had a dark side. You went there. That's
Brian, I'll give you a very real example. There was a young lad only a matter of months ago in the United Kingdom that was before the courts because he did post something on social media that caused the jets to get scrambled. I've been quoting this example for 12 months without knowing that that occurred, and I read it a few weeks ago. He ended up not being charged, but they actually scrambled the jets. I think it was in the United Kingdom because of some misinformation that was published on a social network. This is very real. And I think what's happening is that the regulators around the world are waking up to this. The Online Safety Act in the UK has introduced the concept of mandatory inclusion of profile verification as an option. They are one step closer to saying, if you have a social network and you have users publishing content and that content's going to be consumed by millions of people, then your profiles need to be verified. Now, it is only a matter of time, I believe, before the social networks will be required to retrofit their user bases. That's going to cause major problems for a lot of them because they will lose a lot of advertising revenue because a lot of that revenue is generated off fake accounts. So this is a big issue, and if we don't do something about it,
in the U.S. particularly, free speech rights, my right to speak, hey, I get a right to say whatever I want. That's my free speech, and the idea behind it is I may disagree with what you say, but will defend to death your right to say it. My question is, would this by making everyone register and being identified and being verified, would that squelch free speech rights?
It's a good question. We believe that what we're doing is we're introducing the concept of a town square. And I know a certain social network has referred to their user base as wanting to be more of a town square, except those that attend the town square to speak and to listen, their identity is known. So we're not curtailing the ability for people to speak. In fact, we're encouraging it, and we're encouraging it in an environment where it's safe. And I say it's safe because we don't allow comments. And so if you post something on media.com, you're not going to end up with 300 people jumping on there and saying all sorts of weird and wonderful things that may or may not disagree with you. That's what the social networks are for. They will always have a place. A media.com post can always go and get posted on X or Facebook or LinkedIn, and that can be commented on over there. But we want to create a safe space where people can express themselves. Now, there is an argument.
Well, when you use the word safe space, safe space, that to many people denotes, basically suppression. It's got to be safe. It can't be controversial. It's got to be safe. Whereas To your point, and here, look, I don't mind personally if you're going to say something that's detrimental or opposite of what I say. If I say it's green, you go, no, it's blue. All right, fine. Yes. As long as I know who you are, instead of being, that you're not a bot sitting in the bushes lobbing bombs at people without any responsibility for what you say. The idea of the First Amendment and free speech is fine. Everyone is entitled to their free speech, but you have to be responsible for what you say. In other words, if I tell you you're full of shit, someone has got to be able to say, hey, Brian, you're full of shit too, and here's why. But the idea of hiding in the underbrush or being a bot or even AI, and I think that's one of the biggest problems that we have or an upcoming problem is who is actually saying what they're saying. And is it a real person? Is it AI? Is it someone in a room just lobbing bombs as part of a bot sequence. So
yes,
that's the issue, I think, in a nutshell, is it not?
It totally is. With freedom of speech comes a responsibility to have accountability.
Yes.
And the social networks are not, at this stage, advocating that.
Yeah,
they are providing a platform. I'll give you an example in Australia.
Because it's all about the money.
There is a profile called Donald McQuinney, which is a photo of me with a red hat with a big D on it. And that fake profile, which someone is hiding behind, has been trolling me for several years on X, which I stopped using X about 3 years ago when I found it highly ineffective to respond to the court allegations and the media allegations. And the short seller jumped on with his 70,000 followers and took the conversation down a different path, most of which I had no idea who the identity was. And that's a problem for courts in its own right, because you want to sue someone, you don't even know who to sue. So it's a big problem. And as I said, it's a breeding ground for misinformation. And even if it's honest misinformation as opposed to obviously dishonest or disinformation, if you don't know who's published it, how on earth are you going to correct it? You can't send them a letter. You can't send them a legal letter. You could send them an instant message to their inbox, but, you know, they get plenty of those.
Yeah, and they ignore them all. But yeah, money's behind all of it, isn't it? I mean, what we're talking about is the fact that, as you said, you drive traffic based on the controversy or the argument, and it may not necessarily have anything to do with reality. Yes?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It comes back to my point at the beginning of this conversation, Brian. This is about a business model. Where your business model is driven by advertising revenue, you will focus your efforts on generating as much engagement as you can to maximize your share price or your value of your company, because you know that's how you make money. If you do not make money out of preserving information integrity, other than, you know, you've got an obligation because some regulators say, well, oh, you don't allow misinformation or disinformation, otherwise we'll fine you, then, you know, that's the environment that we're presently in, and that's why we think that media.com's got a very important role to play here. One other observation with the Israel-Hamas war and what I just touched on about where the regulators focus, if someone posts, if we look at it in a banking context, you create a bank account, you're using that bank account for improper purposes, funding terrorism, child sex slavery, drugs, whatever. The banks know who you are, and so when the police come knocking, the banks say, well, this is the person over here. Think about what's happening on social media. There's disinformation spread about the conflict in the Middle East. The regulators come in and go, okay, well, the police come in and go, well, this has been said. What do the social media giants say? We don't know actually who said it. And that's why the regulators know that the social networks, because they don't know the true identity of all of their users, they are compelled to direct their regulatory focus on finding the networks. In recent legislation that's been passed, I know at least in Australia and I think in a couple of other countries, they will find the social network based on its global annual revenue, which I think in Australia, off the top of my head, and don't correct me if I'm wrong on this, is about 5 or 6% of total global revenue. They will fine you if there is misinformation that isn't corrected within a certain period of time. So what's happening is the regulators acknowledge that the social networks don't know who their users are, and they go after who they do know, which is the social networks. And so when the EU held TikTok's feet to the fire and Elon Musk/X's feet to the fire when the conflict kicked off in the Middle East, they weren't targeting those that were actually the perpetrators. They are targeting those the facilitators of those that are perpetrating.
So you're saying that Elon Musk should be a supporter of your efforts.
Well, I would absolutely endorse every social network to have verification.
No, what I'm saying is that he should be endorsing your efforts. Is what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Look, There's no doubt about it. We're approaching the town square concept from two completely different angles. And Twitter's done an amazing job, as have the other social networks, of creating engagement and connectivity. That's their strong point. Authenticity of information and authenticity profiles is where they're lagging at the moment. That's why we think we've got a good solution for that.
For those who would be your opponents in this, or for those who would hold you accountable, they would say, great idea. Why are we to believe you? You've been facing bankruptcy, regulation. You've been part of the problem. Why should we believe you, and why should we trust that you would do this?
Sure.
And without being I'd a troll. And I'll say before.
No, no, no.
Before you answer, earlier when you were talking about the guy that's trolling you, I did want to clear up one thing. Nobody's saying.
Or girl.
Yeah, that's right.
Guy or girl.
And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be a parody account, right? You're fine with parody. It's the trolls. So go ahead. So why if you're not a fan of you, why would we trust you to do this?
Sure. I don't need everyone to be a fan. I think our product over time will speak for itself. But the way that I guess I've been, I'll call it a silver lining. I've gone through the ringer in the press, in the courts, with some outlandish allegations thrown, some of the most extreme misinformation. I was accused of transferring money to the British Virgin Islands. We never had a bank account there. The regulator never checked the bank statements, you know, some pretty fundamental stuff. Accused of running a Ponzi scheme that owned hundreds of Australian, you know, freehold real estate properties, all individually titled, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of assets, you know, all of this stuff and this experience that myself and my family and all of our investors have had to go through has made me realize the extreme situation that can be caused by people not fact checking, but more importantly, there being a safe environment where people can actually express themselves. As I said, I tried to jump on Twitter. We were out of money. What did I do? I jumped on Twitter and tried to clear the air. Probably one of the worst decisions of my life. But it proved how ineffective the current mechanisms are for the little guy to get their voice across. And so what we're doing is effectively, you could say, creating a digital courtroom, not for a judge to sit there and say, well, that's factual and that's not, or you're right and you're wrong. We're allowing the public to be the determinants of that. But what we're doing is creating a safe environment where the media can say whatever they want. You can copy that URL, paste it into media.com, click on respond. It will go and grab that article, and then you can respond. On the left-hand side, you can put in little snippets of text. So you mentioned earlier, Brian Karam was found strangling goats down by the river. Well, maybe it wasn't goats, maybe it was cats. You can take the phrase strangling goats down by the river, paste it into media.com. It will check to confirm that that text is exactly what it says in the article, gives a little tick. And then on the right-hand side, you can say it wasn't actually goats, it was cats. As you touched on earlier, you can then upload upload attachments of supporting files. Maybe there's a photo of you strangling a cat. And then you can also label, very odd example, but anyway, you can also then label that. Is it false, misleading, mistaken? Is it accurate? Is there a clarification required? Is it defamatory? So we use legal connotations to enable the user to express what their formal response is to that. And then I've used this phrase, the safe space, is because it literally sits there next to that snippet of text with your answer, and there is no other comments around that.
Right.
And so the public can now
it's like evidence versus evidence. Here's my evidence, here's their evidence. You decide, right?
Side by side evidence from profiles where you know the person is who they say they are.
Correct. That is a wonderful concept. We're going to, when we come back, we have a few final thoughts, so stick around. We'll be right.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Back. Hey, you. Yeah, you. We're talking to you, and we need your help. As you probably know, independent journalism is a vital pillar of our democracy. Like everything else, it's not free. We're asking all longtime listeners of the show to help support us by becoming a member on Patreon. For the price of a latte, you can help guard democracy. Join us today at patreon.com/JATQ podcast to help us keep bringing you the podcast you love and the facts you deserve.
Hi, we are back. It is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Kerman. With me is James Mulwinney, who has Mulwinney. I'm sorry, did I mispronounce it? I do that all the time.
No, you're all good. Okay. I had Mr. My father had Mr. Machinery many years ago. So
oh, that's okay. Well, I'm sensitive to it because I can't tell you the number of times people have called me Brian Kareem. And I always go, well, that's the tall guy that plays basketball. We get mistaken for each other all the time, but it's Karam. But we're talking about, in essence, what I think, as we draw this conversation to a close, is that lack of informational integrity is an existential threat, I find, to our existence. I mean, existential. It's a threat because you don't know what to believe anymore. And so while we try to do it I hate the term mainstream media or legacy media, but in corporate media, in what's generally seen as media, we used to have an ombudsman that would correct, you know, go through and correct our mistakes. We used to have people, you know, updates where we would correct our mistakes, and we're going to make them. There's no doubt about it. We're human. And so that happens, but it's the idea of correcting those mistakes so people trust you. Say, listen, look, I know he made a mistake, but he corrected it, so we can trust him. They're gonna correct their mistakes. This is a self-correcting method that you're talking about. At the end, it's people supplying information, you know, to the, you know, there was a fire that killed 47 and 38 people were arrested. And then you go, no, here's the picture, or here's the other side of it. It wasn't that. It was, you know, two teenage kids, et cetera, so on. So the idea of the public correcting the mistakes, that still means there has to be some responsibility. And that responsibility resting with the public can only occur, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying this can occur only if we know who the people are that are talking, bottom line, correct?
It's absolutely essential. If someone's going to say, well, actually, no, this is the case situation, and here is the facts from their perspective, then we think it's critical that people know exactly who that person is.
Well, and to that extent, no one can get out of this room alive without asking, so we know exactly who you are. Beatles or Stones? If you're going to listen to one of them.
Oh, Beatles.
Yeah? You got a favorite Beatles song?
Hey Jude, I used to play it on the piano as a young lad for many years.
Really?
I know it's probably even before my time, but I rehearsed it thousands of times.
So you're stuck on a desert island. What book are you bringing? What record are you bringing? And vinyl or well, now MP3, vinyl or computer generated music? What are you gonna listen to?
What am I going to listen to? Probably a fair bit of silence to begin with. The world's a very noisy place. I look forward to being stuck on the island. We used to own two of them in our group until the regulator blew that up, believe it or not. But anyway, and what book? My partner's reading Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. I picked it up about 10 years ago and I couldn't read it. It was just too difficult. And I want to persist, hopefully, with 10 years worth more of life experience under my belt.
All right. Perfect dinner. What would be your
Perfect dinner. Dinner with my partner and our daughter asleep. She's 3 and a half and very energetic, but at least she's there.
So anything where you get where the 3-year-old isn't involved, is that what you're saying?
No, she's we love to have her there, but quite often if we're eating, we'd rather that she's asleep so we can enjoy
Oh, it
each
only
other's
gets better,
company.
Dad. It only gets better. Wait till she's a teen.
No, yeah. Yes. They will definitely want to be on the de desert island in silence.
Well, listen, James, I appreciate you being here, and I find the concept fascinating. And I honestly, because it's one of, as I said, I have often said that misinformation or disinformation, man, that's the greatest threat that we face outside of, climate change. And the reason why people don't believe in climate change is because of misinformation and disinformation. So that, everything that we fight about today is because I don't think we understand each other very well. And I think there's, in communication, there is a transmission and there's a reception. And what I transmit may not be what you receive. You may hear what you want to hear, or you may not hear it at all. So for those people, what you're talking about is clearing up perception so you can see it, read it, hear it. And for that, man, I'm all in. As for your own troubles with misinformation and disinformation, I can only tell you that I have posted articles where I've been called both a right-wing lunatic and a left-wing lunatic at the same time. So you're going to get that's my financially, I haven't had the type of reception or pushback that you have, but I haven't dabbled in those circles. It any as we leave here, any advice you can give to those who are seeking clarification of facts? And I say facts because I say in my business, I'm not here to tell you the truth. There are 5,000 religions on the planet, each with their own truth. But I am here to provide you vetted factual information by which you can, and as long as we agree on what those vetted facts are, we have a system that's in place where we can communicate with each other. If we don't agree on what the facts are, we have a much more difficult time. So what would you say to that, to the vetted factual information? What is your greatest advice to someone seeking great to seeking vetted factual information?
Sure. Well, I would encourage them in time to create a media.com profile so that they can view the other side of the story. Vetted factual information is, as you know, the truth often has many sides and many perspectives. And I think we'd be all a bit ignorant just to say, well, there's one set of facts and that's it. It's a challenge. That's why courtrooms exist. That's why judgments make judgment calls. Our hope is with media.com that if things get said in the media, at the moment, there's nothing to kind of rein that in closer to the truth. And so we're hoping through millions of these snippets of text and then responses being written, often with their own supporting evidence, and then people re reading and responding, or someone saying something, then responding. If that iteration can take place very rapidly, potentially even millions of times a day, then all of a sudden we're starting to bring society closer to the truth. And if we can even just bring everyone a few degrees closer to the truth, I think we've done, you know, we've done something that the world very much needs at the moment.
There you go. And with that, we'll say thank you for joining us, James. Love to have you back. And I hope you wish you success in your endeavors, because it is the endeavor of everyone, I hope, to seek out facts and truth. So once again, thanks for joining us. I am your host, Brian Karam. This is Just Ask the Question. Oh, wait a minute. Before we go, can't forget this. So if they want to create a profile, where do they go?
Very simple. Media.com.
There you go. And there's the plug. So stick around. We'll be back next time.
Spectrum Business knows small business owners have to do it all. Get Spectrum One for Business. Just $49.99 a month for internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for a year. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.